West Legal Aid Center would like to welcome you to the audio program, Whistleblowing in the Corporate World Series, Part 1, The Advent of the SEC Whistleblower Program. Thank you for joining our presenter. Jordan A. Thomas is a partner at Labaton Sutro, LLP, and chairs his whistleblower representation practice. Labaton is the first law firm in the country to establish a practice exclusively focused on protecting and advocating for SEC whistleblowers. Prior to joining Labaton, Jordan spent more than 15 years in federal law enforcement, as both a trial attorney at the Department of Justice and an assistant director in the Enforcement Division of the Securities and Exchange Commission. While at the agency, Jordan played a leadership role in the development of the SEC Whistleblower Program. Currently, he is also the editor of the SEC WhistleblowerAdvocate.com, a website dedicated to helping responsible organizations establish a culture of integrity and courageous whistleblowers to report possible securities violations without personal or professional regrets. Thank you for joining us, and I will now turn things over to our speaker.
Good afternoon, and thank you for participating in the first of a six-part series addressing whistleblowing in the corporate world. As our first program, the goal today is to examine the launch of the SEC Whistleblower Program, the perfect storm of events that precipitated its launch, the mechanics of the program, and to provide advice for responsible organizations and potential whistleblowers in light of the new program. By way of introduction, let me say that during my time in law enforcement and up until today, I, and I'm sure many of you, have struggled with the very simple question. Through the long series of scandals, beginning with Enron and continuing through the current economic crisis, why haven't more witnesses come forward? The fact is, in many ways, corporate scandals are like bank robberies. They are rarely one-man jobs, and there are always witnesses. Take any news-grabbing event of egregious wrongdoing. The $2 billion loss by a rogue trader at UBS, more than $1 billion of client funds vanishing at MF Global, or the LIBOR manipulation involving Barclays. I can tell you there were witnesses to each of these cases. And for far too long, good men and women, witnesses, have remained silent, while countless investors and the public at large have been seriously injured. In many ways, the SEC Whistleblower Program, mandated by the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, reflects Congress's attempt to address this problem. And the problem, by all measures, is significant and widespread, involving breakdowns in corporate governance, law enforcement, and basic human ethos. So for a moment, let's consider the environment before this historic legislation was enacted. To do this, let's look at slide 3. As a context for our examination of the corporate climate from the inside out, it's useful to look at an integrity survey conducted by KPMG of more than 5,000 employees. The survey found that 74% of employees personally observed or had firsthand knowledge of wrongdoing during the previous 12 months. Again, during the previous 12 months. 47% of the respondents didn't believe that they would be protected from retaliation if they reported misconduct. 61% didn't believe they'd be satisfied with the outcome if they did report the misconduct. And in the banking finance industry, 60% reported that the wrongdoing that they had observed could cause a significant loss of public trust if discovered. Obviously, these figures are troubling. Equally troubling, the Ethics Resource Center, a leading think tank on corporate ethics in the United States, found in its 2009 National Business Ethics Survey that 15% of employees who observed and reported misconduct perceived retaliation as a result. Given these statistics, it's no wonder that corporate scandals often go undetected for long periods of time. Indeed, there were witnesses, but they didn't come forward because they were frightened or they believed that their organization wouldn't appropriately handle any reported misconduct. Next slide. These disheartening statistics were only the tip of the iceberg in the pre-Dodd-Frank environment and reflected the very real challenges facing the law enforcement community. And as you will see, the issues are deeply connected. This lack of trust by employees in their employers, coupled with the absence of meaningful incentives and protections, resulted in law enforcement authorities receiving few high-quality tips from insiders. Of course, this isn't surprising because whistleblowers face great personal and professional risks. Accordingly, before reporting misconduct, whistleblowers carefully weigh the substantial risks associated with coming forward against any potential benefits. In the pre-Dodd-Frank environment, the protections were extremely limited. Financial rewards were often non-existent, and potential liability was a significant deterrent to reporting possible violations. As a result, in the face of misconduct, too often, good men and women did nothing. They feared getting involved. They looked the other way. They didn't believe that they could make a difference. With few exceptions, insiders with information about violations of the securities laws remained silent, disengaged, and disenfranchised. To compound the problem, too few entities self-reported violations, and the ones that did had a tendency to underreport violations in an attempt to avoid enforcement action or to limit potential sanctions. As a result, regulators were reactive. They tended to scramble to respond to scandals after they had become public through media reports or very late in the game. The importance of individuals or entities coming forward, internally or externally, cannot be overstated. They can provide law enforcement authorities with early and invaluable assistance in identifying the scope, participants, victims, and ill-gotten gains associated with fraudulent schemes. Without their assistance, building cases from the ground up with circumstantial evidence is often a Herculean task, and too often the bottom, simply and frighteningly fast, falls out of these cases. For those of you who watched the Oscar ceremony last year, you may recall Charles Ferguson, the award-winning director of The Inside Job, who lamented that 3 years after the financial crisis, not a single executive had gone to jail. Now, this has been a common and long-standing criticism of law enforcement authorities. I can tell you as a law enforcement veteran that the simple truth is, without actionable intelligence from insiders, law enforcement authorities will always have great difficulty successfully bringing cases against officers, directors, and other gatekeepers involved in securities fraud. Next slide. And then everything changed. The financial crisis devastated economies around the world. The details of the Madoff scandal became public. Congressional inquiries and related hearings exposed the limitations and failings of both corporations and law enforcement authorities. Our government and many others were called upon to save weak financial institutions. And predictably, there was a public outcry. In short, a perfect storm of regulatory inadequacy, egregious institutional risk-taking, and good old-fashioned greed and fraud paved the way for an international financial crisis of epic proportion and scandals of shocking magnitude. Next slide. Governments around the world have taken different approaches to this necessary reform. In the United States, in January 2010, one of the first initiatives taken by the SEC under the leadership of Chairman Shapiro was to establish an innovative cooperation program for which I'm proud to have been one of the principal architects. The program is designed to encourage and facilitate individuals and entities with potential civil or criminal liability to come forward and report possible securities violations using the same tools that have been successfully used by prosecutors in the Department of Justice for decades, such as cooperation agreements, deferred prosecution agreements, non-prosecution agreements, and criminal immunity requests. In plain English, the SEC now has a way to get bad guys to come in and provide assistance in its investigations and related enforcement actions, rather than having to force them out of hiding and later prosecute them as it had in the past. As a result, the SEC has become more effective and efficient. No longer can those with potential liability simply circle the wagons and reasonably expect to avoid being successfully prosecuted, as was often the case in the past. The program compels co-conspirators to break ranks with one another and compete for a deal from the SEC and other law enforcement authorities, and giving a premium to those who come in first. Next slide. 6 months later, Dodd-Frank emerged. Among the statute's goals was to promote financial stability, promote protected consumers, investors, and businesses. Significantly, it also was intended to end taxpayer-funded bailouts of financial institutions. Since there has been a great deal of commentary regarding Dodd-Frank, generally, I'll limit my commentary here to the whistleblower provisions in the statute. Well, Dodd-Frank was passed in July of 2010. The act required that the SEC establish a whistleblower program which offers anonymous reporting, robust employment protections, and significant monetary awards. The implementing rules for the program became effective in August 2011. However, potential whistleblowers could submit tips to the SEC following the enactment of the statute in July of 2010. Next slide. During the rulemaking process, more than 1,500 comment letters were submitted to the SEC regarding the SEC whistleblower program, and they addressed the stakeholders' significant concerns with the program. Two of the most hotly debated questions involved: should the commission require whistleblowers to report possible securities violations internally before they could become eligible for a monetary award? Absent such a requirement, many of the commentators in the corporate community expressed concern that existing compliance and internal reporting systems would be undermined. On the other side of the aisle, commenters in the whistleblower advocacy community expressed concern that such a requirement would discourage employees from making important whistleblower submissions. The commission, in a Solomon-like decision, addressed these concerns in the final implementing rules for the program by strongly incentivizing rather than requiring internal reporting. Another serious concern involved whether the commission should prohibit culpable whistleblowers' eligibility for a monetary award. Some commenters expressed concern that allowing culpable whistleblowers to receive monetary awards would create incentives for individuals to participate in and cover up SEC violations. Other commenters argued that culpable whistleblowers are often the best source of information for law enforcement authorities. Again, the Commission thoughtfully addressed these concerns in the final implementing rules for the program by incentivizing culpable whistleblowers to report securities violations while preventing them from financially benefiting from their own misconduct or misconduct for which they are substantially responsible. Next slide. So who can be an SEC whistleblower? Any individual who, alone or jointly with others, provides information to the SEC relating to a possible violation of the securities laws has occurred, is ongoing, or is about to occur. Only individuals, not companies, are eligible for the whistleblower protections and incentives in Dodd-Frank. It's important to note that how broad the definition of whistleblower is, because it includes misconduct that has occurred, is ongoing or is about to occur. So please keep that in mind as you're thinking about the program. Next slide. The program has international reach. After all, the economy is global, and so is securities fraud. The SEC Whistleblower Program recognizes that the financial markets are boundless. Accordingly, possible securities violations that occur anywhere in the world are eligible for the program. Potential international violators can be individuals or organizations, both public or private. Similarly, a whistleblower can be anyone, regardless of citizenship. According to the annual report of the SEC Whistleblower Program, which reported on program activity for the seven-week period between the effective date of the program's implementing rules and the close of the agency's fiscal year, nearly 10% of tips came from foreign jurisdictions, including the United Kingdom, Australia, China, Canada, Italy, Norway, Serbia, Spain, the Netherlands, Turkey, and Uruguay. This is particularly significant given the fact that the program has not been widely advertised or reported abroad. So, if you're a senior officer at an international bank, hedge fund, or investment advisor, does the long arm of U.S. financial regulators and law enforcement authorities reach you and your organization? The answer is probably. As you may know, Dodd-Frank obliterated many of the exemptions for investment advisors and non-U.S. entities to avoid SEC regulation. While each case is different, here are a few basic ways to determine whether your organization may be subject to U.S. jurisdiction. If your organization has U.S. clients, U.S. investors, U.S. investments, U.S. operations, or U.S. employees, it may be subject to SEC jurisdiction. Simplifying a complex issue even further, if entities use the U.S. mail in connection with regular business activities, they may want to consult with counsel to understand potential exposure to U.S. securities laws. Finally, Dodd-Frank expressly permits the SEC and other law enforcement organizations to share information provided by whistleblowers with foreign regulatory and law enforcement authorities. To this end, the close working relationship between the SEC and international authorities is likely to become even closer, and these organizations will benefit from greater access to actual intelligence that will protect investors. Next slide. For many, the difficult personal and professional decision to come forward and report wrongdoing requires a reconciliation of conflicting values. On the one hand, our society celebrates team players, and on the other, it has contempt for mindless sheep that go along to get along. At times, our society champions the individual who does what is right. Too often, however, society unfairly characterizes the individual who reports problems as disloyal. In the past, the fear of retaliation or social stigma has deterred some potential whistleblowers from reporting possible securities violations. And as a result, countless investors have been seriously injured. Such fear, whether real or imagined, undermined corporate compliance and integrity programs, and the ability of law enforcement authorities to detect and prosecute securities violations. To correct this serious problem and encourage more people to take a stand against wrongdoing, the SEC Whistleblower Program permits whistleblowers to report possible securities violations anonymously. To anonymously report possible violations of the securities laws to the SEC, a whistleblower is required to be represented by an attorney and must provide his or her counsel with a copy of the submission signed under the penalty of perjury. The attorney will verify the identity of the whistleblower before any information is submitted to the SEC, serve as an intermediary between the SEC and the whistleblower during any investigation and related enforcement action, and advocate for the highest potential monetary award if the submission results in a successful SEC enforcement action. Prior to receiving any monetary award, for eligibility, tax, and other reasons, whistleblowers must disclose their identity to the SEC. After this disclosure, since the SEC's investigations are confidential and non-public, the agency may only disclose the whistleblower's identity in very limited circumstances. One practical warning for potential whistleblowers is that even if a whistleblower subsequently retains counsel to make an anonymous submission, the SEC may not be able to fully protect the whistleblower's identity if he or she has already been disclosed their identity to the SEC. Accordingly, the best practice is not to contact the SEC until a whistleblower has decided whether to file anonymously. Next slide. What employment protections are available through the SEC whistleblower program? Section 922 of the Dodd-Frank Act states, no employer may discharge, demote, suspend, threaten, harass, directly or indirectly, or in any other manner, discriminate against a whistleblower because of any lawful act done by the whistleblower, including providing information about possible securities violations to the SEC, participating in any SEC investigation or related enforcement action, making disclosures to the SEC required by law. Next slide. To take advantage of the employment protections, an SEC whistleblower must have a reasonable belief that the information provided to the agency relates to a possible securities law violation that has occurred, is ongoing, or is about to occur. Accordingly, the law requires two things. The whistleblower must have a subjectively genuine belief that the information demonstrates a possible violation. Second, the whistleblower must have a good faith belief that a similarly situated employee might also reasonably possess the same view. Despite significant incentives to report internally, a whistleblower is not entitled to the employment protections associated with the SEC whistleblower program until he or she reports the information about a possible securities violation to the SEC in accordance with the rules of the program. Currently, at a minimum, that means that the whistleblower must submit a form TCR to the SEC. Accordingly, if retaliation is anticipated, it may be prudent to formally and quickly report possible securities violations to the SEC. That being said, if retaliation occurs before this requirement is met, a whistleblower may still be eligible for other federal and state whistleblower protections. It's worth emphasizing that, as I stated in the beginning, the SEC, in response to the concerns raised by the corporate community, has built within the SEC whistleblower program numerous incentives, things like increased award percentages for people who report internally first, 120-day grace period for people to report internally before coming to the SEC, and the ability to, if it's an individual reports something to their organization, that if the organization subsequently reports the misconduct to the SEC along with other potential misconduct, the whistleblower would have the benefit of all the additional work that the company takes after they reported, but before it's reported to the SEC. These incentives are significant. However, the key thing for people to understand is that until they file that the necessary paperwork with the SEC, they do not have the benefit of the employment protections associated with the SEC whistleblower program. It's also worth reiterating that there are numerous programs, both at the state and federal level, that provide employment protections for whistleblowers. And there may be other options if a potential whistleblower is not eligible for those provided for in Dodd-Frank. Next slide. If whistleblowers are subjected to retaliation in violation of the law, they have the right to immediately sue their employers in federal court without having to exhaust the administrative process before filing, as is required in other statutes, like the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. The types of remedies available to whistleblowers include reinstatement with equivalent seniority, double back pay with interest, attorney's fees, and reimbursement of other litigation-related expenses. These protections exist regardless of whether or not the alleged securities violations are proven or lead to a successful enforcement action. Now, the reason for this is that the definition of whistleblower, as you may recall, includes possible violations of the securities laws, things that haven't happened or things that might happen. And they're based upon the whistleblower's good faith. So, as a whistleblower, if you have a good faith belief that there's a violation of the law, and people, if they had the same information, would have a similar view, you are protected, even if the concerns that you express are not ultimately proven. Next slide. The statute of limitations that applies to the employment protections associated with the SEC whistleblower program is quite long compared to that which was available under the Sarbanes-Oxley Act and some of the other employment protection statutes. Whistleblowers have 6 years from the retaliatory conduct, or 3 years from when the employee knew or reasonably should have known of the retaliatory conduct to file a claim if it is not more than 10 years after the violation occurred. This is a dramatic expansion of the 90-day statute of limitations previously provided for by the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, and it will require corporations to reconsider some of their employment practices, including document retention associated with with many personnel matters. Next slide. Although federal programs that provide monetary awards for whistleblowers have been around since the Civil War, for the first time, the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act authorized the payment of monetary awards to individuals who report violations of the federal securities laws to the SEC. Subject to the eligibility requirements, the Commission will pay an award or awards 10 to 30% of monetary sanctions collected to one or more whistleblowers who voluntarily provide the SEC with original information that leads to the successful enforcement by the Commission in a federal court or administrative action in which the SEC obtains monetary sanctions totaling more than $1 million. The SEC will also pay an award based upon amounts collected in certain related enforcement actions by other state and federal law enforcement authorities and self-regulatory organizations. The key thing that people need to understand is the million-dollar threshold. So you may have a case brought by the Department of Justice or another federal agency and the SEC. to be eligible for any award, whether it's from the SEC or these other organizations, the SEC must obtain monetary sanctions totaling more than $1 million. Next slide. So we've examined who can be an SEC whistleblower, and we've talked, given an overview of the monetary awards that people are eligible for under the program. Now, we would like to focus on who is eligible for a monetary award. The following individuals are not eligible for a monetary award for obvious reasons. Individuals that have been criminally convicted for related misconduct, members, officers, and employees of the SEC and other enumerated organizations, family members and those that reside with an SEC member or employee, members, officers, and employees of a foreign government, and foreign government is defined broadly, individuals that knowingly or willfully provide false information to the SEC. Similarly, certain classes of people. Next slide. Similarly, certain classes of people, like attorneys, accountants, officers, directors, trustees, and partners, employees or contractors whose duties involve compliance or internal audit, individuals retained to conduct an internal investigation involving possible violations, individuals who obtain information about violations from an ineligible individual, are not immediately eligible for financial awards. However, it is critically important to note that virtually everyone, except those on the prior slide, are eligible for a financial award under certain key circumstances. The most common exceptions and circumstances that would permit these types of individuals to receive an award are to prevent the relevant entity from engaging in conduct that is likely to cause substantial injury to the financial interest or property of the entity or investors. The relevant entity is engaging in conduct that will impede an investigation or of misconduct, or at least 120 days have elapsed since the whistleblower reported the information internally. That being said, since the eligibility rules for monetary awards can be complicated and the facts and circumstances of each case are unique, potential whistleblowers in these categories are strongly encouraged to consult with a lawyer, use the eligibility calculator on SECWhistleblowerAdvocate.com and the result and the report that it produces, or carefully review the relevant SEC rules. Next slide. What we're going to now do over the next couple of slides is focus on some of the key definitions associated with the SEC whistleblower program and more specifically the monetary awards associated with the program. The first key definition or phrase is voluntarily provide. SEC whistleblowers must voluntarily provide the SEC with information about possible securities violations. Accordingly, any individual who is required to provide such information as a result of a pre-existing legal duty or agreement with the SEC or another regulatory or law enforcement organization is not eligible for a monetary award under the SEC whistleblower program. For the same reason, any individual who personally or through his or her representative receives a request, inquiry, or demand from the SEC, public company Accounting Oversight Board, or PCAOB, a self-regulatory organization like FINRA, Congress, or any other authority of federal government, or a state attorney general or securities regulatory authority that relates to the subject matter of the information provided to the SEC is not eligible for a monetary award under the SEC whistleblower program. Now, it's important to note that the second bullet on this slide focuses on an information request. The thing to note is the information request must be addressed to the individual, not to the organization. So if an organization receives a subpoena request or an informal request from the SEC, but the request did not go to a specific individual within the organization, then that individual, if they provided information to the SEC, would probably satisfy the voluntarily provide prong of the eligibility analysis. Next slide. The whistleblower can be any individual or group of individuals, regardless of citizenship. It may be a spouse, a friend, a distant relative, a secretary, so long as the information concerning the violation is original. Information is original if it is not already known to the SEC, not exclusively derived from allegations in a judicial or administrative proceeding, and provided to the SEC for the first time after July 21st, 2010. Now, this July 21st, 2010 is important. I periodically get calls from potential whistleblowers who indicated that they reported misconduct to the SEC prior to July 21st and continued to work with the SEC after that date regarding misconduct, and they wonder if they're eligible. If the core information regarding the possible securities violation was reported prior to July 21st, the answer is probably no. However, people after July 21st can report misconduct that occurred prior to July 21st, 2010. So for these purposes, the key thing is July 21st, 2010 is when the SEC became aware of the alleged misconduct or after. So if that's true, this element is likely to have been satisfied. Original information can be derived from independent knowledge or independent analysis. Independent knowledge is essentially insider or non-public information. It can be information from an individual's personal knowledge or experience, or derived indirectly from someone else's. To use a legal term, hearsay evidence is acceptable in the SEC whistleblower program. In contrast, independent analysis is information provided to the SEC based upon the analysis of publicly available information. A good example of this would be the information that Mr. Markopoulos provided the SEC in the Madoff case. The key thing about independent analysis, or satisfying the independent analysis criteria, is that a whistleblower must do more than simply accumulate publicly available information and provide it to the SEC. It must take that publicly available information and analyze it and come up with some conclusion or information that is new. So essentially, they're taking public information and coming up with a new conclusion. Using the Madoff example, Mr. Markopoulos took advantage of publicly available information to come to the conclusion that the performance reported by Mr. Madoff and his organization were not probable or possible. And because of that, he believed he was engaging in a Ponzi scheme. The same sort of thing can be done by an analyst on Wall Street who is analyzing the market, looking at the performance of various different companies, and if in their research they came to conclude that one or more organizations were engaged in misconduct, that analyst could be a potential whistleblower. Next slide. Leads to successful enforcement action. The SEC will consider the information that you provided to have led to a successful enforcement action if the information was sufficiently specific, credible, and timely to cause the staff to commence an examination, open or reopen an investigation, or inquire into different conduct as part of a current examination or investigation. Another way to satisfy this element is that the information significantly contributed to the success of an ongoing examination or investigation. In most cases, successful SEC whistleblowers are likely to be individuals that provide information that causes the SEC to open or reopen an investigation. However, there may be circumstances where a whistleblower, because of what they know or evidence that they have that is not known to the SEC and can significantly help the SEC, such as tape recordings or other things, may be able to satisfy the higher standard of providing significant information that contributes to the success of an investigation. However, the longer someone takes to come forward, the less likely the SEC won't have reached the evidence that that person has, or the value of that evidence will be diminished. Next slide. Another important definition is monetary sanctions. Monetary awards may be substantial in the SEC whistleblower program. To put this in context, consider that in fiscal year 2011 and fiscal year 2010, the SEC secured monetary sanctions of $2.8 billion in each year. In several cases, sanctions exceeded $100 million. Significantly, these figures do not include the monetary sanctions collected in related enforcement actions by other regulatory and law enforcement organizations, such as the Department of Justice, that whistleblowers would also be eligible to receive an award based upon. If you'd like to learn more about monetary sanctions and SEC enforcement actions, you are again encouraged to visit the SECWhistleblowerAdvocate.com, specifically the SEC sanctions database. In any case, to ensure that adequate funds are available to pay whistleblower awards, Congress established a replenishing investor protection fund, which at the close of fiscal year 2011 had a balance in excess of $450 million. This fund allows for the SEC to pay whistleblowers without taking money from injured investors. Now, monetary sanctions in the statute are defined as all monies, including penalties, disgorgement, and any interest ordered to be paid, and monies deposited into a disgorgement fund or other fund pursuant to Section 308B of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. To meet the $1 million minimum threshold required by the SEC whistleblower program, monetary sanctions from one or more actions that arise out of the same nucleus of operative facts may be grouped together. Next slide. Any violation of the federal securities laws qualifies. While it is common to associate the financial services industry with SEC regulations, the SEC has broad jurisdiction over a wide range of industries and entities, both public and private. A successful enforcement action can be brought against any entity or individual that violates the federal securities laws. The most common SEC violations are insider trading, misrepresenting or omitting important information about securities, manipulating market price of a security, stealing customer funds, violating broker-dealers' responsibility to treat customers fairly, selling unregistered securities, improper revenue recognition, and Foreign Corrupt Practice Act violations, or FCPA violations, involving bribery. If you'd like more information about what constitutes a securities violation, you're encouraged to watch Part 2 in this series, A Securities Law Primer, or visit SECWhistleblowerAdvocate.com. Next slide. When the SEC determines an amount of award, there are certain factors that may increase the amount of award and other factors that may decrease an amount of award. Factors that increase an amount of award is the significance of the information provided, the degree of assistance provided, law enforcement interest in making the award, and participation in internal compliance systems. A couple of these may be worth fleshing out. The law enforcement interest in making an award may be that a whistleblower has come forward and reported on very significant misconduct. However, the law enforcement authorities were only able to collect a small percentage of the money lost. So the whistleblower might not be able to receive a very significant award unless the SEC were able to increase the percentage. So in those circumstances, if kind of on all other ways, the whistleblower has provided excellent assistance, they may choose to provide a higher percentage to compensate that individual for all the great work they've done, even though the amount that they're collecting in the process was relatively small. The last one we've talked about before is the idea of providing information internally. This is something that the Commission has stated that they value and will reward people who report internally. Factors that may decrease an award include culpability or involvement in the reported misconduct, unreasonable reporting delay. So this says that whistleblowers can't basically allow for misconduct to get worse and expect a higher monetary award. And the last is interference with internal compliance systems. So if someone were to undermine the internal compliance processes, the SEC would lower their award. Next slide. In the coming years, the SEC whistleblower program is likely to revolutionize how the securities laws are enforced domestically and abroad. To help you kind of get some perspective on SEC enforcement activity, prior to the enactment of Dodd-Frank, the SEC typically worked over 200 active cases at any one time. They brought between 700 and 750 enforcement actions each year. Of those cases, over 20% had monetary sanctions in excess of $1 million. As I said earlier, the SEC secured monetary sanctions in each of the last 2 years in excess of $2.8 billion. In light of whistleblower provisions of Dodd-Frank, the SEC is now expects a 30% increase in tips. Perhaps most importantly, though, the quality of tips have significantly improved. With this actionable intelligence, the agency is now positioned to bring more cases against officers, directors, and other gatekeepers that have been historically difficult to prosecute without direct evidence, and in all cases, to be more effective and efficient. I'd venture a guess, albeit an educated one, from my time both at the SEC and now in private practice representing whistleblowers, that in the coming years, many of the SEC's most significant cases will be the direct result of whistleblowers. Next slide. Due to the SEC whistleblower program and other whistleblower provisions in Dodd-Frank, the risk of detection is dramatically higher than ever before, and the cost of noncompliance with U.S. securities laws is no longer manageable. After all, violators are likely to be subject to substantial monetary and non-monetary sanctions, along with reputational harm and shareholders' actions that can be disruptive to business and extraordinarily costly. Next slide. Recent data suggests corporate entities are tuned to this new reality. Consider the Littler Mendelson whistleblower survey from November 2011. In this survey, 96% reported concern about whistleblower claims. 73% reported this as an emerging risk area. 67% predicted that whistleblower claims would increase. And 65% reported being only moderately prepared. The Ethics Resource Center's National Business Ethics Survey that was released in January 2012 found that 42% reported that their employers had weak ethical cultures. 45% witnessed misconduct at work, and 22% of employees who reported misconduct perceived retaliation. And as you may recall, in 2009, that figure was 15%. So unfortunately, we're seeing an increase in employees who are reporting retaliation as a result of coming forward and reporting potential misconduct. And finally, Labaton Sicharo, the firm that I work at, conducted a US-UK financial services industry survey that was released in July of 2012. In that survey, 39% of financial service professionals believed that their competitors had engaged in illegal or unethical conduct. 26% had observed or had firsthand knowledge of misconduct in the workplace. On a positive note, 94% indicated they would report wrongdoing given the protections and incentives of the SEC whistleblower program, specifically anonymous reporting, employment protections, and the possibility of a monetary award. 44% were aware of the SEC whistleblower program. I predict that once this awareness percentage increases, the SEC whistleblower program will be even more powerful and investors will have greater protection. Next slide. In conclusion, these survey findings suggest that illegal or unethical conduct is more widespread than commonly thought. The willingness to report misconduct is a changing tide, and that the corporate world still has important ethics work to do. Although this topic warrants a lengthier discussion, in response to the whistleblower provisions in Dodd-Frank, here are five things that every responsible organization should consider. First, invest in compliance. Organizations should resist the temptation to cut compliance programs during these difficult financial times. After all, the best way to ensure that possible violations are reported internally and addressed appropriately is to regularly review and strengthen these important programs. Due to the increased probability of detection and the negative collateral consequences, sophisticated legal and compliance professionals will be able to leverage this new reality to secure support for establishing state-of-the-art compliance programs. Second, have a game plan. Be prepared to respond to internal reports of misconduct and regulatory inquiries with internal and external resources. Three, self-report. Don't wait to report violations of the securities laws until your investigation is complete. Know all of the facts or are confronted by a regulator. Timely self-reporting is appreciated by the SEC and will be rewarded. Fourth, communicate more. Too often, companies fail to provide employees any information about how their concerns were handled. This practice undermines employees' confidence in their compliance programs and may lead to unnecessary SEC whistleblower submissions. Lastly, and perhaps most importantly, though it might sound a bit fluffy, create a culture of integrity and then nurture it. Based upon my experience at the SEC, this is what is often missing in organizations with significant securities violations. Despite the fact that many organizations ignore this fundamental area and solely focus on their energies and resources on the latest compliance trends. Many compliance programs, well-wrought, thoughtful, and expensive as they may be, only address half of the equation. The more important and preemptive issue is often forgotten, creating a broad and potent ethical culture. Without a robust ethical paradigm woven into the corporate culture, compliance is a post facto and tactical exercise. In the post-Dodd-Frank environment, the stakes are too high for these tactics. Organizations need ethical strategists. As evidence of this, consider the long list of distinguished companies that have been the subject of significant SEC enforcement actions. It has been my experience that most of these organizations have had the necessary resources to establish state-of-the-art compliance programs. Many of these organizations had adequate compliance programs and vigilant corporate compliance officers. However, during the relevant times, what many of these organizations lacked was a strong ethical culture. Next slide. On the other side, based upon my experience at the SEC and work as an SEC whistleblower advocate at Labatage Ushara, here are five tips that every prospective SEC whistleblower should consider. First, know the odds. The SEC receives about 30,000 tips a year. Those tips are reviewed by the Office of Market Intelligence for apparent reliability, detail, and potential violations of the federal securities laws. The professional staff in that office determines whether each tip should be forwarded to an investigative team or referred to another law enforcement or a regulatory organization. The most promising tips are assigned to an investigative staff who conduct a more detailed review and determine whether the alleged misconduct warrants investigation. Only 349 tips led to investigations in fiscal year 2011. Only a fraction of these will lead to an SEC enforcement action. On an even smaller percentage of those enforcement actions will result in monetary sanctions in excess of the $1 million threshold required for a monetary award under the SEC whistleblower program. This means that the quality of your submission to the SEC is critically important unless you're feeling lucky. Second, attempt to identify violations. When assessing tips, the SEC looks for possible securities violations and corroboration. So you should attempt to determine which violations of the federal securities laws may have occurred. If you're unfamiliar with the securities laws, one way to identify possible securities violations is to go to the SEC website or go to SEC Whistleblower Advocate and look for prior enforcement actions that involve similar misconduct. With this information, you should attempt to gather the necessary evidence to satisfy each element of the violation and highlight this evidence in your whistleblower submission. The SEC is likely to give the greatest weight to evidence that suggests that the alleged violators knowingly or recklessly engaged in the misconduct. That said, don't be discouraged if you do not have evidence relating to every element of a particular violation. This is common, particularly in the early stages of a case. Just do your best to assemble all potentially relevant evidence. This approach will ensure that you make a more complete and compelling whistleblower submission. Third, legally collect evidence. Prior to making an SEC whistleblower submission, without violating the law, you should collect all available documentary and testimonial evidence that helps to establish the possible securities violations. This evidence should be provided to the SEC along with your initial submission. The more corroborating evidence you have, the more likely it is that the SEC will initiate an investigation, and that investigation will lead to successful enforcement action. However, you are strongly encouraged to consult with an attorney about how to legally collect evidence, especially if you're considering taping conversations or removing documents from your workplace. Fourth, be prepared. You should prepare for the possibility that things will change in your personal or professional life once your allegations surface. Although there is less risk if you file anonymously, as a general rule of thumb, the more significant the alleged misconduct is, the more likely you will be the subject of retaliation or other negative consequences. Accordingly, anticipate possible problems, know your rights and the related procedural requirements, consult with friends and family, and consider seeking legal or other expert advice. These precautions may be unnecessary, but failure to properly prepare to blow the whistle can lead to serious and unnecessary problems. The last is timing matters. Deadlines. The SEC whistleblower program has many of them, and whistleblowers need to pay close attention to these deadlines and other timing considerations. For instance, if you fear others may make a similar submission, it may be better to make a cursory submission and supplement it later, because the program is designed to reward whistleblowers who report original information. In most cases, there is no reward for second place. Similarly, even though the SEC whistleblower program significantly incentivizes whistleblowers to report internally to their employers, it may make sense to simultaneously file with the SEC. After all, the program's employment protections do not take effect until a whistleblower reports the possible securities violations to the SEC in accordance with the program's rules. The bottom line is that timing issues can make the difference between you receiving or not receiving the significant incentives and protections associated with the SEC whistleblower program. Next slide. If you'd like more information about the SEC Whistleblower Program, I encourage you to visit secwhistlebloweradvocate.com. This innovative website uses videos, searchable databases, eligibility calculators, comprehensive legal primers, thought leadership collections, and timely blog entries to help responsible organizations establish a culture of integrity and potential whistleblowers to report possible securities violations. Now, this concludes the formal presentation. Please feel free to reach out to me directly, and I encourage you to plug in to the next webinars, which will examine more specific aspects of the whistleblower program and its implications in various segments of the commercial marketplace. Part two deals with the securities law primer. Part three is accountants as whistleblowers. Part four is an insider's guide to the SEC enforcement process. Part five is corporate lawyers as whistleblowers. And part six is whistleblowing and the corporate insider. I thank you for your participation in this, and I welcome any questions that you may have.